The Golden Bough. A Study of Magic and Religion. By Sir James George Frazer. This audiobook was produced by Klaus-Dieter Mond, Rastatt, Germany and is published under the conditions of the Gutenberg Organization. Chapter 10. Relics of Tree Worship in Modern Europe. Part 3. In England, the best-known example of these leaf-clad mums is the Jack in the Green, a chimney sweeper who walks encased in a pyramidal framework of wickerwork, which is covered with holly and ivy, and surmounted by a crown of flowers and ribbons. Thus arrayed, he dances on May Day at the head of a troop of chimney sweeps, who collect pence. In Frictal, a similar frame of basket work is called the Whitsuntide basket. As soon as the trees begin to bud, a spot is chosen in the wood, and here the village lads make the frame with all secrecy, lest others should forestall them. Leafy branches are twined round two hoops, one of which rests on the shoulders of the wearer, the other encircles his claves. Holes are made for his eyes and mouth, and a large nosegay crowns the whole. In this guise he appears suddenly in the village at the hour of Vespers, preceded by three boys blowing on horns made of willow bark. The great object of his supporters is to set up the Whitsuntide basket on the village well, and to keep it in him there, despite the efforts of the lads from neighbouring villages, who seek to carry off the Whitsuntide basket and set it up on their own well. In the class of cases of which the foregoing are specimens, it is obvious that the leaf-clad person who is led about is equivalent to the May tree, May bough, or May doll, which is carried from house to house by children begging. Both are representatives of the beneficent spirit of vegetation, whose visit to the house is recompensed by a present of money or food. Often the leaf-clad person who represents the spirit of vegetation is known as the king or the queen. Thus, for example, he or she is called the May King, Whitsuntide King, Queen of May, and so on. These titles, as Mannhardt observes, imply that the spirit incorporate in vegetation is a ruler, whose creative power extends far and wide. In a village near Salzwedel, a May tree is set up at Whitsuntide and the boys race to it. He who reaches it first is king. A garland of flowers is put round his neck and in his hand he carries a May bush, with which, as the procession moves along, he sweeps away the dew. At each house they sing a song, wishing the inmates good luck, referring to the black cow in the stall milking white milk, black hen on the nest laying white eggs, and begging a gift of eggs, bacon, and so on. At the village of Elgoth in Silesia, a ceremony called the King's Race is observed at Whitsuntide. A pole with a cloth tied to it is set up in a meadow, and the young men ride past it on horseback, each trying to snatch away the cloth as he gallops by. The one who succeeds in carrying it off and dipping it in the neighboring Oder is proclaimed king. Here the pole is clearly a substitute for a May tree. In some villages of Brunswick at Whitsuntide, a May-king is completely enveloped in a May bush. In some parts of Thuringia also they have a May-king at Whitsuntide, but he is dressed up rather differently. A frame of wood is made in which a man can stand. It is completely covered with birch boughs and is surmounted by a crown of birchen flowers, in which a bell is fastened. This frame is placed in the wood and the May-king gets into it. The rest go out and look for him, and when they have found him they lead him back into the village to the magistrate, the clergyman, and others, who have to guess who is in the verdurous frame. If they guess wrong, the May-king rings his bell by shaking his head, and a forfeit of beer or the like must be paid by the unsuccessful guesser. At Wahrestedt, the boys at Whitsuntide choose by lot a king and a high steward. The latter is completely concealed in a May bush, wears a wooden crown wreath then with flowers, and carries a wooden sword. The king, on the other hand, is only distinguished by a nosegay in his cap, and a reed, with a red ribbon tied to it, in his hand. They beg for eggs from house to house, threatening that, where none are given, none will be laid by the hens throughout the year. In this custom the high steward appears, for some reason, to have usurped the insignia of the king. At Hildesheim, five or six young fellows go about on the afternoon of Whit Monday cracking long whips in measured time and collecting eggs from the houses. The chief person of the band is the Leaf King, a lad swathed so completely in merchant twigs that nothing of him can be seen but his feet. A huge headdress of merchant twigs adds to his apparent stature. In his hand he carries a long grog, with which he tries to catch stray dogs and children. In some parts of Bohemia on Whit Monday the young fellows disguise themselves in tall caps of birch bark adorned with flowers. One of them is dressed as a king and dragged on a sledge to the village green, and if on the way they pass a pool the sledge is always overturned into it. Arrived at the green they gather round the king. The crier jumps on a stone or climbs up a tree and recites lampoons about each house and its inmates. Afterwards the disguises of bark are stripped off and they go about the village in holiday attire, carrying a May tree and begging. Cakes, eggs, and corn are sometimes given them. At Grossvargulla, near Langenselsa, in the 18th century a grass king used to be led about in procession at Whitsuntide. He was encased in a pyramid of poplar branches, the top of which was adorned with a royal crown of branches and flowers. He rode on horseback with a leafy pyramid over him, so that its lower end touched the ground, and an opening was left in it only for his face. Surrounded by a cavalcade of young fellows, he rode in procession to the town hall, the parsonage, and so on, where they all got a drink of beer. Then under the seven lindens of the neighboring Sommerberg, the grass king was stripped of his green casing. The crown was handed to the mayor, and the branches were stuck in the flax fields in order to make the flax grow tall. In this last trait the fertilizing influence ascribed to the representative of the tree spirit comes out clearly. In the neighborhood of Pilsen, Bohemia, a conical hut of green branches, without any door, is erected at Whitsuntide in the midst of the village. To this hut rides a troop of village lads with a king at their head. He wears a sword at his side and a sugarloaf hat of rushes on his head. In his train are a judge, a crier, and a personage called the frog flayer or hangman. This last is a sort of ragged Merry Andrew, wearing a rusty old sword and best reading a sorry hack. On reaching the hut the crier dismounts and goes round it looking for a door. Finding none, he says, "Ah, this is perhaps an enchanted castle. The witches creep through the leaves and need no door." At last he draws his sword and hews his way into the hut, where there is a chair, on which he seats himself and proceeds to criticize in rhyme the girls, farmers, and farm servants of the neighborhood. When this is over, the frog flayer steps forward and, after exhibiting a cage with frogs in it, sets up a gallows on which he hangs the frogs in a row. In the neighborhood of Plus the ceremony differs in some points. The king and his soldiers are completely clad in bark, adorned with flowers and ribbons. They all carry swords and ride horses, which are gay with green branches and flowers. While the village dames and girls are being criticized at the arbor, a frog is secretly pinched and poked by the crier till it quacks. Sentence of death is passed on the frog by the king. The hangman beheads it and flings the bleeding body among the spectators. Lastly, the king is driven from the hut and pursued by the soldiers. The pinching and beheading of the frog are doubtless, as Mannhardt observes, a rain charm. We have seen that some Indians of the Orinoco beat frogs for the express purpose of producing rain, and that killing a frog is a European rain charm. Often the spirit of vegetation in spring is represented by a queen instead of a king. In the neighborhood of Lipchowick, Bohemia, on the fourth Sunday in Lent, girls dressed in white and wearing the first spring flowers, as violets and daisies, in their hair, lead about the village a girl who is called the queen and is crowned with flowers. During the procession, which is conducted with great solemnity, none of the girls may stand still, but must keep whirling round continually and singing. In every house the queen announces the arrival of spring and wishes the inmates good luck and blessings, for which she receives presents. In German Hungary the girls choose the prettiest girl to be their Whitsuntide queen, fasten a towering wreath on her brow, and carry her singing through the streets. At every house they stop, sing old ballads, and receive presents. In the southeast of Ireland on May Day the prettiest girl used to be chosen queen of the district for 12 months. She was crowned with wildflowers. Feasting, dancing, and rustic sports followed, and were closed by a grand procession in the evening. During her year of office, she presided over rural gatherings of young people at dances and merrymakings. If she married before next May Day, her authority was at an end, but her successor was not elected till that day came round. The May Queen is common in France and familiar in England. Again, the spirit of vegetation is sometimes represented by a king and queen, a lord and lady, or a bridegroom and bride. Here again the parallelism holds between the anthropomorphic and the vegetable representation of the tree spirit, for we have seen above that trees are sometimes married to each other. At Halford in South Warwickshire, the children go from house to house on May Day, walking two and two in procession and headed by a king and queen. Two boys carry a maypole some 6 or 7 feet high, which is covered with flowers and greenery. Fastened to it near the top are two crossbars at right angles to each other. These are also decked with flowers, and from the ends of the bars hang hoops similarly adorned. At the houses the children sing May songs and receive money, which is used to provide tea for them at the schoolhouse in the afternoon. In a Bohemian village near Knigrotz on Whit Monday the children play the king's game, at which a king and queen march about under a canopy, the queen wearing a garland, and the youngest girl carrying two wreaths on a plate behind them. They are attended by boys and girls called groomsmen and bridesmaids, and they go from house to house collecting gifts. A regular feature in the popular celebration of Whitsuntide in Silesia used to be, and to some extent still is, the contest for the kingship. This contest took various forms, but the mark or goal was generally the maytree or maypole. Sometimes the youth who succeeded in climbing the smooth pole and bringing down the prize was proclaimed the Whitsuntide King and his sweetheart the Whitsuntide Bride. Afterwards the king, carrying the maybush, repaired with the rest of the company to the alehouse, where a dance and a feast ended the merrymaking. Often the young farmers and labourers raced on horseback to the maypole, which was adorned with flowers, ribbons, and a crown. He who first reached the pole was the Whitsuntide King, and the rest had to obey his orders for that day. The worst rider became the clown. At the maytree all dismounted and hoisted the king on their shoulders. He nimbly swarmed up the pole and brought down the maybush and the crown, which had been fastened to the top. Meanwhile the clown hurried to the alehouse and proceeded to bolt 30 rolls of bread and to swig 4 quart bottles of brandy with the utmost possible dispatch. He was followed by the king, who bore the maybush and crown at the head of the company. If on their arrival the clown had already disposed of the rolls and the brandy, and greeted the king with a speech and a glass of beer, his score was paid by the king. Otherwise he had to settle it himself. After church time the stately procession wound through the village. At the head of it rode the king, decked with flowers and carrying the maybush. Next came the clown with his clothes turned inside out, a great flaxen beard on his chain, and the Whitsuntide crown on his head. Two riders disguised as guards followed. The procession drew up before every farmyard. The two guards dismounted, shut the clown into the house, and claimed a contribution from the housewife to buy soap with which to wash the clown's beard. Custom allowed them to carry off any victuals which were not under lock and key. Last of all they came to the house in which the king's sweetheart lived. She was greeted as Whitsuntide Queen and received suitable presents to wit, a many-coloured sash, a cloth, and an apron. The king got as a prize, a vest, a neckcloth, and so forth, and had the right of setting up the maybush or Whitsuntide tree before his master's yard, where it remained as an honourable token till the same day next year. Finally the procession took its way to the tavern, where the king and queen opened the dance. Sometimes the Whitsuntide king and queen succeeded to office in a different way. A man of straw, as large as life and crowned with a red cap, was conveyed in a cart, between two men armed and disguised as guards, to a place where a mock court was waiting to try him. A great crowd followed the cart. After a formal trial this straw man was condemned to death and fastened to a stake on the execution ground. The young men with bandaged eyes tried to stab him with a spear. He who succeeded became king and his sweetheart queen. The straw man was known as a Goliath. In a parish of Denmark, it used to be the custom at Whitsuntide to dress up a little girl as the Whitsun bride and a little boy as her groom. She was decked in all the finery of a grown-up bride, and wore a crown of the freshest flowers of spring on her head. Her groom was as gay as flowers, ribbons, and knots could make him. The other children adorned themselves as best they could with the yellow flowers of the trilias and caltha. Then they went in great state from farmhouse to farmhouse, two little girls walking at the head of the procession as bridesmaids, and six or eight outriders galloping ahead on hopper horses to announce their coming. Contributions of eggs, butter, loaves, cream, coffee, sugar, and tallow candles were received and conveyed away in baskets. When they had made the round of the farms, some of the farmers' wives helped to arrange the wedding feast, and the children danced merrily in clogs on the stamped clay floor till the sun rose and the birds began to sing. All this is now a thing of the past. Only the old folks still remember the little Whitsun bride and her mimic pomp. We have seen that in Sweden the ceremonies associated elsewhere with May Day or Whitsuntide commonly take place at midsummer. Accordingly, we find that in some parts of the Swedish province of Blekinge they still choose a midsummer's bride, to whom the church coronet is occasionally lent. The girl selects for herself a bridegroom, and a collection is made for the pair, who for the time being are looked on as man and wife. The other youths also choose each his bride. A similar ceremony seems to be still kept up in Norway. In the neighborhood of Brynken, Dorfine, on May Day the lads wrap up in green leaves a young fellow whose sweetheart has deserted him or married another. He lies down on the ground and feigns to be asleep. Then a girl who likes him, and would marry him, comes and wakes him, and raising him up offers him her arm and a flag. So they go to the alehouse, where the pair lead off the dancing. But they must marry within the year, or they are treated as old bachelor and old maid, and are debarred the company of the young folks. The lad is called the bridegroom of the month of May. In the alehouse he puts off his garment of leaves, out of which, mixed with flowers, his partner in the dance makes an osege, and wears it at her breast next day, when he leads her again to the alehouse. Like this is a Russian custom observed in the district of Nerechtar on the Thursday before Whitsunday. The girls go out into a birchwood, wind a girdle or band round a stately birch, twist its lower branches into a wreath, and kiss each other in pairs through the wreath. The girls who kiss through the wreath call each other gossips. Then one of the girls steps forward, and mimicking a drunken man, flings herself on the ground, rolls on the grass, and feigns to fall fast asleep. Another girl wakens the pretended sleeper and kisses him. Then the whole bevy trips singing through the wood to twine garlands, which they throw into the water. In the fate of the garlands floating on the stream they read their own. Here the part of the sleeper was probably at one time played by a lad. In these French and Russian customs we have a forsaken bridegroom, in the following a forsaken bride. On Shrove Tuesday the Slovenes of Oberkrain drag a straw puppet with joyous cries up and down the village. Then they throw it into the water or burn it, and from the height of the flames they judge of the abundance of the next harvest. The noisy crew is followed by a female masker, who drags a great board by a string and gives out that she is a forsaken bride. Viewed in the light of what has gone before, the awakening of the forsaken sleeper in these ceremonies probably represents the revival of vegetation in spring. But it is not easy to assign their respective parts to the forsaken bridegroom and to the girl who wakes him from his slumber. Is the sleeper the leafless forest or the bare earth of winter? Is the girl who awakens him the fresh verdure or the genial sunshine of spring? It is hardly possible, on the evidence before us, to answer these questions.